Also, I really enjoyed that. Yeah, the way you sort of knitted everything together at the end. That was very, especially without notes as well. Yeah, yeah, very impressed. Yeah, thank you very much. I'm happy to chair unless anyone else is jumping a bit too. Okay, we'll take me as the chair then. And yeah, as I say, we'll also get contributions from people tuning in on Discord as well. But yeah, so any questions or comments? Yeah, Bill.
Yeah, just maybe try and spark a bit of controversy. The emphasis on free access. You're quoting from obviously the Critique of the Culture programme, where Mark spends a lot of time talking about Labour time vouchers. And of course, there's sort of like organisational reasons why we absolutely, you know, historically the party has totally and absolutely rejected Labour time vouchers. But I always think that complete rejection itself is sort of fetishistic, in that you know that there's a possibility that sort of thing could be put forward or used by a socialist movement that was working towards the society as we understand it. Precisely for the same reason you were mentioning that people need to have a hard time envisaging. We're so used to the idea that you hand over a token and get some goods in return, that would be one way in which we can manage this transition from the immediate society of commodity relations to a society where it is the distribution of our collective endeavour. And in fact, nowadays, obviously, because money itself has ceased to be a commodity in a meaningful sense, that's already partly been achieved. And I think what would realistically achieve the reality would be an equalisation of the working week and the idea that we would all have, like they say, a certain amount of equality in what we're doing to get to look towards some idea of a rough equality of what we're getting out of society in return. And just likewise on the concept of thinking about trying to get this across to people, I don't know if I'm exactly right on the stats, I was looking at some recently, but productivity in the UK is producing about £90,000 per worker per year. So realistically, those 30-odd million people, I think it is, who are in work. But if everyone who was in work today was being paid £90,000, that's the standard of living at a rough bar that we should be able to expect to have if we eliminated the capitalist mode of production and the share of the wealth going to the capitalist class exclusively. So I think there are ways we can picture and imagine the way forward towards the society where we've eliminated the realm of necessity.
Did you want to
I take the view that it doesn't actually matter what we think now, basically. I mean, you know, come the time, then's the time. I mean, no, I think it's very useful to have these discussions and to thrash out possibilities, but actually, come the time, it doesn't matter what we decide now, actually. It's what people engaged in the process who have actual knowledge of the situation and can judge. I mean, I can think intellectually about these things and convince me of A and not A, depending on which way I think about it. So I don't really have... No. Interesting point.
Patty, and then Howard.
Yeah, apologies for being very naive and and new in this movement. But you said about Marx was, he didn't like equality. And you gave the example about John and the coat, or the big man and the small man. And when you said that, because, you know, the big man wouldn't be able to afford a coat like the small man would, but I automatically thought, but surely in a fair society, you know, the coats would be priced at one price, and then, you know, because everybody needs a coat, so... You know, I kind of got stuck there, and then I start thinking maybe I'm... on the wrong track, or
it's
sorry, I
no, 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 it's, I mean, that's what we look for. When you're thinking, when we're thinking those terms, I am thinking about capitalism, because in this, the Marxist point was, when you get to a socialist society, the whole question of fair distribution just ceases to mean anything, because, or at least it does within the SPGB conception of it, because in the SPGB conception, we have free access. That means that each person decides what they need, and then they go to the common store and they take it. So they satisfy their own needs. There is no particular entitlement system that actually limits what they can have. So in a socialist society, no, you're absolutely right, it really doesn't matter at all. So this is only an issue in capitalism. You're quite right. You picked up quite rightly on that.
Howard and then Alina.
Right, just a few points from the copious notes. I don't know how you do this. A tour de force to sort of just stand up there and speak without notes. Don't know how you do it. But a couple of things. I mean, at one point you did say that in socialism people would have financial security. I know you didn't mean it. People would have financial security, whereas the whole idea would sort of disappear, wouldn't it? Just to sort of pick you up on that anyway. Just a couple of other things. You suggested that anarcho-communists talk about wanting free access. They talk about getting rid of capitalism and so on and having a different kind of a freer society. I can't recall seeing them specifically refer to wanting free access to goods and services in the way they do, in the way we do. I may well have missed something there. This question of equality, you said socially, I mean, it's a question of terminology really, socialism wouldn't be an equal society, you said at one point. I mean, I remember an elderly member of the Swansea branch that I was in for years said, we can't ever have equality in the sense of, you know, people all having, getting the same sort of things being exactly the same. He says what socialism will give us is economic equality. That's what socialism is about, really. I mean, I think you meant that when you said it. We'd have an equal relationship to the means of production. It's economic equality, really. So socialism would be an equal society in that sense. We wouldn't all be equal in the sense we'd all have the same things, but we'd all have the things that we needed. Because, you know, they wouldn't cost anything. So economic equality. And I certainly like your definition of freedom as self-directed activity. Very good way of putting it, indeed. It encapsulates so much to put it like that. Yeah. Mm. Just on the market socialism thing, I think when we talk about market socialism, we should preface it by the words so-called. In the sense that, you know, okay, socialism means different things to different people, we know, but our view of socialism is the market is completely antithetical to it. So I think we need to say it's, you know, when people say, yes, what we need is market socialism, we should say, okay, but you know, that's what they call it, but we wouldn't call it socialism in any sense.
I agree with almost all that. The thing about anarchists is that no two anarchists agree on anything. But if you go onto the anarchist sites, there's lots of talk about free access. I mean, you will find anarchists that don't believe in it, and you will even find communist anarchists that sort of a bit dubious about it. But the whole point about communist anarchism is ultimately that is communism in the same sense that Marx or Bakunin meant communism, which is free access. Some anarchists do, some anarchists don't, really. If you go on to LibCon, which is a broadly anarchist site, lots of talk about free access there. Equal society, yeah, I agree, absolutely. It's a society of, I wouldn't call it economic, I tend to equate the term economics with proprietarian economics. So I wouldn't use that term, but that aside, it's a terminological issue, then I would absolutely agree with you. And what was the market socialism, yeah. I mean, I could have gone on a long, longer about that, but yeah, market socialism for us. I mean, there are many reasons why we would object to market socialism, not just the one that I was suggesting. But yes, so-called market socialism. Yeah.
Okay. Alina?
So my question is about the equal access to means of production. Because while it sounds great and tempting, I find it hard to imagine it working. So I'd like to know if Marx gave any guidance of how it works, or do we have an idea? Like, for example, just driving here, I was listening how batteries for electric vehicles are made.
And it's batteries.
Yeah. How these batteries for electrical vehicles are made. So at the moment, it's like we need some rare resources that are found only in a few places on the planet. And then there's whole complicated process to build, multi-step process to build this battery, make it really happen. And currently it's all driven by money and profit, but if not money and profits, how do we drive this process of making a battery?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, how long have you got, really? I mean, this is a question that has so many different aspects to it that we can get into. I mean, personally, don't quote me on this, because I'm no expert, but I have certain suspicions that the electric car is not actually going to, it's not the panacea that it's going to be for a number of reasons.
Just an example.
Yeah. I mean, you talk about, I mean, it requires rare earths, and rare earths are actually not rare in the world. They're actually quite common, but they're very scattered and they're very, very expensive to mine. So there's only a couple of places in the world where it's economical to mine them. So that is a big issue. But as for how do we do it, well, I wish Robin Cox were here. he could take over on this one and talk for hours. What we do, I mean, society, Robin's idea is that we have a decentralized form of society, and we identify what we need to do by chains of stock keeping. And in fact, this actually happens in capitalism already, that in fact, you know, right-wing libertarians, so-called libertarians, and they will tell you, well, what Mises actually proved that socialism couldn't work, because without the price mechanism, you wouldn't know what to build or what items to select or how to direct resources. And of course, the problem with that is that Mises was talking exclusively about a Soviet-type society. Mm-hmm. With centralized production. Well, we on the whole tend to think that society could actually be run without central direction, but through a process of stock keeping, because capitalism itself runs, is a system of stock keeping as well in parallel with money. And in fact, my understanding is, although don't quote me with this, because I haven't got sort of anything I can quickly look up, but I understand that firms in Japan have actually gone over completely, some firms in Japan have gone over completely to organising their business around stock keeping rather than around the price mechanism. So there are mechanisms that we can think of that could actually facilitate that. But the bottom line would be that it would be down to populations themselves to decide what they want to produce. I'm sure there are a few people here who's sort of saying, he hasn't mentioned hunter-gatherers yet, I wonder what's gone wrong. But I will go to hunter-gatherers. What we find among hunter-gatherer people is they run a system, or certain types of hunter-gatherers actually run a system which is based on common ownership. Yeah, they have no property, they have no forms of authority whatsoever. And what they do is they can choose how much time they want to spend producing things, because they can decide what they want to produce and balance that against the time they would have to spend producing it. And they actually spend their time deliberately limiting what they want. So what we produce can then become a man in a socialist society can become a matter of choice from society. You will have democratic, whatever the structure socialist society decides to impose upon itself, like it will be some kind of impose upon is the wrong word, but you know what I mean. So there will be choices to make. So rather than the market deciding, you know, today if a product is produced, it's produced for a profit. So the producer is not really interested whether it's useful or whether people want it. If they don't immediately want it because they haven't even conceived of that want, he'll get his marketing team out to induce the want and create the want. So it's the market and it's capitalist production and profit that drives what we actually produce and what we, and ultimately what we need, because we then come to want it because it's there and eventually we want it. So it will be down much more to a process of choice. So I think, does that answer your question? Probably not. It's a huge question.
Well, so yeah, I realise that it was a huge question. So something to think over. Yeah. Well, if I can carry on, I think the hunters-gatherers example has this drawback that they would never be able to build electric vehicles.
No, absolutely not. Actually, no, it's not. No, I mean, we could not reproduce a hunter-gatherer society.
Yeah.
We can't go back. I mean, that's absurd to even suggest that we could. But they give us certain principles that we can actually look at to see how they might be relevant to a future society, without saying that the whole economy of their society can be reduced.
There's no other question I could follow on.
Sibeli, did you?
Yes.
Is it okay if Sibeli speaks? Then
maybe
come
back. No, she can carry on.
Oh,
she's just speaking.
Okay, yeah, go ahead.
So as you mentioned, that now what we need is decided by capitalist principles. So without them, who decides what do we need? Who decides if we need an electric vehicle?
We could decide anything. But remember that once you get rid of the property system, the choices you make multiply enormously. A property system puts huge limitations on what you can do because everything has to be funneled through it. Whereas, so for example, in a socialist society, you could say, you could look, unlike a capitalist society where everything comes down to market efficiency, in a socialist society, you could have a whole range of social values. And you could democratically choose which values are important to you. So, for example, you might say, "Well, these resources are rare, you know. So we need to limit how we use them. Okay, we can use them for this, or we can use them. What preferences do we have? You know. So there's choices. And if people really want them, and they're kind of expensive things, and then you can say, "Well, okay, there's not enough for everyone. Perhaps we can share them." There are many, many things, like, you know, I've got a friend who's got a lawnmower in his back shed, which he uses about 3 times a year. Well, you know, loads of people could use that lawnmower, you know, if it was shared around. So lots of stuff could be shared. We could actually introduce very, very efficient systems of public transport and to sort of mop up all the sort of necessity for vast numbers of electric cars on the road. Yeah, and so forth. There is a whole world of choice that starts to open up in front of us without the property system.
Thank you.
Okay,
Sibeli?
Hi. So, I just would like to point out few things that I was talking and thinking and reading, especially at the socialist standard. One thing that I think we as a socialist get always stuck is, as you said, the idealism of a socialist society, which getting away from capitalism mentality, but you want to be a socialist with the ways and the wealth from the capitalist society, isn't it? That's what we intend. So we get stuck with and in this evolution from the accumulation of ways of production, accumulation of the all access we have, and then the problem I think we get stuck now. You got this as I say, as utopian way of thinking that we can live a society without having the access from other ways, from other products, from the entire production of the world. Like as you were saying, someone wants an electric car because now suddenly it is green to have an electric car. But who, as I said, who is going to do the car? And who is going to fix these cars? And who is going to be providing the all materials to make their car function and accessible? So my point here is, I'd like you to talk a bit, Richard, please. Why are you thinking we're gonna just end capitalism, not reach socialism, doing what you want, without really paying interests on the raw materials for supply all the necessities that we have. For example,
I'm
main necessity.
Why do we think that we can have this without the raw materials?
Yeah, it's like how you cannot be like, let's put an example here in England,
yeah,
or in Brazil, doesn't matter what place. Mm-hmm. I want to be self-sufficient, and I want to have everything that the world is giving to us as a free access.
Right.
But I'm going to make sure, how am I going to make sure that people that are supplying me with the goods I need to survive,
right,
they're going to have the same access and freedom of access,
yes,
and of course, housing, education, and everything. So
sure,
that's the point. That's why I said we'll get stuck. Because you consider having this freedom of access, but you're not considering the whole entire globe, and they might have different necessities, and they might don't want things you want, and then suddenly they don't want to have just books.
I'm with you.
Understand? So the point is the practicality from capitalism to socialism, and make sure that the whole globe I have satisfied with the ways they are producing and receiving the goods that we share for now for
sure.
Slavery, that's, yeah, for example.
Okay, that's the sort of question that we can only answer in broad terms, because there are 101 different ways in which society can organize itself, and socialist society, and it may not even organize itself in the same way in different parts of the world, and it will change over time. So there is no single definitive answer that we can give, so we can only answer that in the abstract. And in the abstract, certainly most socialists think that we will need some form of administration at various levels. Some don't. Some think it can be entirely dispersed, but others, I'm no expert on this, so I can't speak from any point of view of theoretical point. But when it actually comes down to choices, one of the things that people often imagine is that we talk about a democratic society, and democracy is a hugely attenuated form of organizing things in our society. Democracy generally means first class and post democracy. But in a socialist society, democracy doesn't just have to mean the ayes have it, the majority has it. It can actually mean that we can look to minorities, see what minorities want, and we can consider the needs of everyone and actually say, okay, there will be conflicts. There will be conflicts of that kind. And so, but because we have such flexibility, we have so much more opportunity to resolve those conflicts easily. Like, for example, I was having this discussion with someone a little while ago. Suppose there is a beautiful valley somewhere where people have lived for many years, and it's a wonderful river down, and there's lots of wildlife and everything, but there is a huge shortage of power in the region. Yeah. So So we need to get more power to people in that area. So the only way that anyone can figure of doing it is to dam the valley and use hydropower. Yeah? So we've got a conflict of interest between those people who live there and the people who need the electricity. Yeah? It's that sort of conflict could actually occur very easily in the socialist society. Nobody's, I'm saying it's, you know, it's not going to be ideal, there are going to be conflicts.
Yeah, the cutting of the water and the Coca-Cola bottle and avocado.
So in that kind of situation, if it were a capitalist society, it would all come down to financing, and ultimately it would probably come to a decision about who actually owned the land and who therefore had the power to make the choice, and those people who were there and didn't want the valley to be flooded would probably just be evicted, and they might be compensated or they might not, depending on where they lived. In a socialist society, you have a completely different situation. You get people together and you say, look, these are the situations, these are the needs, these are your needs, these are your needs. What can we do so that everybody gets their needs met or as near as possible? And it might be that, you know, people will say, and I would also suggest that in a socialist society, I can't prove this, but I think that people will have a much looser relationship to property and with holding on to things. So it might be that the people who live in the wonderful valley might say, okay, well, what are you going to do for us? So, okay, we can. Where would you like to live if you lived in an alternative place? Let's build you a house there, sort of overlooking another wonderful stream somewhere else, so that we can meet the needs of this community here, and you can get what, so we can compromise and actually have a discussion about, you know, how we actually meet everyone's needs or as closely as possible without the imposition of property sort of on top of it. Now that's the kind of answer that I would give. And, you know, if you have people who want one thing and some people want another, and there are only resources to meet the needs of one group of people but not the other, then, as I said, we can figure out ways of sharing. We could look at, cars, you know, sort of, we could have car ports, you know, where people could just go and take a car when they need to go somewhere, you know, rather than everyone have a car and it's sitting. I have a friend who lives in Gibraltar. It's a very tiny space, but everyone wants a car, yeah? And the neighbours next to my friend in Gibraltar, they have five members of the family and they have five cars and a scooter. And the reason they have the scooter is that when only one of them can use their car at any one time, because they take it out and then they put the scooter in the space to make sure that nobody else can take it, because parking is at a premium. Yeah? This is the kind of absurd situation that can occur in a kind of capitalist society. But in a socialist society where we don't, where we have the possibility of developing ourselves, there are so many more things in life that we can actually, that can be meaningful to us, that we can share stuff, and it won't be such a big burden. I can imagine that productivity in a socialist society would go down quite dramatically. We wouldn't, in one sense, I mean, first of all, we would need to bring the rest of the world, you know, sort of that is really living on, what is it, $1.75 a day, something absurd like that. We would have to bring them up to a decent standard of living with everyone else. But once we've done that, I think what we need to produce would be much lower than what we do now. Anyway, I'm sorry, I talked.
That's what we say, isn't it? That as Marx and Engels says, it's the associations and collaborations then.
Yeah.
But the state is going to have to be, really, the government is still have to take, because it's a big job if you watch exportation, importation, for example. You cannot just rely on community to do that. The government, which I say the government, the people, the social class is going to have to take control and participation on this, isn't it? That's the word.
Sandy was the next to speak, but hopefully everyone on Discord can hear okay. And feel free to put a queue in the speaking queue if anyone on Discord wants to chip in. Sandy and then Roy afterwards.
Thanks. I have got a reflection or a comment more than a question. And that is, I totally get that socialism creates choices and it allows people to be creative. But for me, I think there's a complexity there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it relies on a level of goodness in people, a level of good-naturedness in people that I don't think exists outside of a very small framework. You know, I mean, if I had a lawnmower, I would share it with all my neighbours. I would. I'd share it with all of you. But if it got broken, who would fix it?
Okay.
Who would pay for it? If I lent it to someone and they decided, if then they lost it or decided not to give it back, what then? Where does that leave me? What if they, you know, decided to spin me a yarn of, oh, I don't, you know, do you mean? I think life for me, I think it just assumes a goodness in people that I have experienced. Maybe it's because I live in a capitalist society. Maybe. But, do you know what I mean? It's just a reflection. I'm not expecting to...
Well, I mean, I love this. I really am interested in this, these sorts of issues. And maybe I can just give you a scenario. In a socialist society, nobody has money, nobody has property, they have their own possessions. And if you want something, you go to the common store and you take it. So lending things, it's like, you see, I think that, you know, in a socialist society, there'll be no exchange, there'll be no value, but there might be a market. There might be a market. Not the kind of general commodity market that we have now, where things are produced in order to be sold. But you must remember that markets pre-existed capitalism. There are pre-capitalist markets. I have a painting on my wall, which I love. It's a little misty alleyway, a little canal in Venice. And I've had it for many years. And I'm thinking, I love this painting, but it's time, maybe I'd like a change. Now, if I were living in a socialist society, I would take that painting down to the common store and leave it there for someone else. And I might find a painting that, oh, that's nice, I can have that. If somebody broke something of yours, you could replace it. Unless it's something unique. And then you would have a sort of kind of bad feeling about that other neighbour. But in terms of sharing, the whole nature of the way in which we relate to each other through things will change in a socialist society. You don't actually need people to be especially good, because the whole nature of the relationship between people, not the sort of personal relationship, but the social relationship, the way in which we are united to one another by the property or the lack of it in the particular society, will change dramatically. I mean, for example, people often ask things like, well, you know, you often get this from sort of right-wing libertarians, you know, I want a 10-room mansion, you know, who's going to stop me having a 10-room mansion? And the answer to that is, you know, I'm going to take it and sod everyone else, you know, I'm not a nice person, I just want to look after number one. And the answer to that is very simple. In a socialist society, the one property that people still retain is their property of labour. They can devote their labour any way they want. They can use their labour any way they want. And if somebody is going to sort of try and grab a 10-room mansion, how are they going to look after it? Who is going to devote somebody with a free life? Who is going to devote their life to going and cleaning up after them, doing their cooking for them, doing all the maintenance for them? Society will have a view about it, of somebody who's trying to be selfish. Somebody else says, I want an ocean-going liner. Who's going to crew it for them so that they can actually live in luxury? Who's going to sort of sacrifice their life to somebody else? This is a society of free people, you know? So you have to take into consideration the social relationships within the society in order to answer these kind of questions. Okay. So I don't know if that helps you. Really.
It's okay.
Roy?
Okay. Given the state of the planet, given what's occurring, is it still valid to talk about free access to goods and services? if socialism came, I've got to say if it comes, the task that humanity has in front of us is colossal. The damage which has been done by capitalism, to talk about free access to goods and services, is utterly utopian. I know it's a party position and it's a position I've always held, but you know, given what's going on, it don't make a lot of sense at the moment. If socialism comes, my argument is we've got such a colossal task in front of us, talking about things like free access to goods and services, which actually is a business term, it's not a socialist term at all. But how valid do you think what I'm saying is?
My view is that free access is the only possible solution that we actually have. It's the only way we can go if we're going
to
solve
it. That's what socialism is about, but given the world we're living
in... Given the world we're living in, socialism and free access, from my point of view, is the only way we can go. If we maintain the property system that we've got at the moment, then we're just going to go absolutely down the chute.
I'm not so talking about maintaining it, Richard.
No, well, what other alternatives are we talking about, Ron?
Well, I'm just saying that the tasks in front of us are colossal.
I know.
And talking about free access to goods and services is actually so utopian, given the world we're living in at the moment, given the state of the planet, but what needs to be done on the planet, I just can't see it.
Well, that's the point. You know, if you can't see it, but lots of people can't see it, but what's the issue then? Why can't it happen? I mean, that would be my question.
What can't happen is the tasks that are in front of us.
Well, give me one.
What needs to be done?
Give me one.
To clean up our world and our planet. Is colossal, and talking about free goods and services just doesn't mean true. If humanity plumbed for socialism tomorrow, the tasks that are in front of us make free access to goods and services not viable, in my opinion.
Yeah, you keep saying that, right? But the question is, why?
Not the moment.
Because of what's in front.
Yeah, why? Well, get to explain. I mean, it's you see, this is the thing. This is the sort of situation that we get into regularly with people who encounter socialism for the first time. They have a gut feeling about something, but push them, and they can't actually sort of state why. The whole point about socialism, that why is free access not possible? Why is a proprietarian society possible, but not free access under these conditions? That's what I want to know.
I think I've said what I think,
right.
And I just think that the task in front of us, I'll keep repeating myself, are just so colossal.
No, I understand. Yeah. I understand the feeling. I understand the feeling really well.
To me, it's a fact. I mean, she comes from Brazil, the tropical rainforest. There's whole sections of it which are just a dump.
Okay, we've got a few
people. People rely on the cash. The people rely on the money.
I'm not talking about money or cash. I'm just talking about the task that would be in front of a socialist society. What we need to do.
Awesome. I'm sure we can sort of revisit this, and Glenn's been wanting to speak, and then Joy, and then who was it?
Bill? Well, just briefly in relation to this gentleman, all I would say is I think he's incredibly successfully made the case for socialism by telling us how utterly bad things are at the moment. So if nothing else, even if it's not socialism, he's made an extremely strong case for a change. And I would disagree with him about the task. Something like 60% of people engaged in capitalism work in the financial industry.
Right, yeah.
So you would free up 60% of the current labour. That's the first thing. The second thing is, actually, the tasks are nowhere near as big as I think you're painting them. If they keep going on the same trajectory, then of course they are big and they're getting bigger. But if the whole trajectory changed and our society was organised for the benefit of people and the environment, nature has an incredibly quick way of recovering, incredibly quick, and I suspect it's not as dark as you're painting.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Okay, Joy?
I sort of wanted to say more or less what Glenn said, but I wanted to add that if we think that we want to make a better society now, the idea that we can do it within capitalism is more of a utopia than socialism. Because if we think that within this society now, where everything is based on a profit system, we can tamper with that and make sure that the entire world is benefiting, it's cloud cuckoo land, in my opinion.
Okay, Bill, did you have your hand?
Yeah. So just back to the idea of thinking about the ways that the putting free access to people in a comprehensive manner, because it does exist already in the form of public lending libraries. And that extends also forward onwards to, as you say, you could have tool libraries. I mean, there's already toy libraries and there's already places that have games libraries and all sorts of things like that. Okay, they're non-consumable goods, you know, you can, there's something to give back at the end. But the idea of free access in those things is, A, no one has to pay to get to them, but they don't have unlimited rights. When you go to the public lending library, you can only have so many books at a time, because that's the limit that they've placed on. That is still free access. And that's, you know, the history of the commons has always been that the commoners have common access to the common, but they always have it mediated by a set of rules and guardians that say, well, these are the terms of access to the commons that you are going to use. So I think that's possibly another way. Free access doesn't necessarily mean unlimited. You can have your own personal Death Star. Like you said, who's going to build my Death Star for? But it means that by common consent, this is what we've all agreed together. We can all have, and this is what, a question over here, this is what we're all prepared to work towards providing for each other. I think that's the other side of the coin.
Yeah. And don't forget, of course, that free access is only one aspect of socialism. So for example, I threw away a two-bar fire the other day. Well, yeah, a two-bar fire, and I got rid of it because it was too big. I've been buying I'm getting older, so I get cold in the wintertime, so I've been buying little fan heaters, and they fall apart every 2 years quite regularly, and I've been buying them over the last 10 years. This fire I threw away was a two-bar fire. It was a wedding present. Not my wedding present, my mother's wedding present. Oh. It was over 70 years old, and it had been functioning perfectly well for 70 years. We can produce durable goods and save vast amount of resources, not this kind of stuff that falls apart every 2 years. I mean, can people remember when washing machines used to last? My last washing machine lasted me 25 years, they last about 6 years now. And it's just a vast, vast waste of labour. That capitalism and resources that capitalism would admit with that socialism would immediately have a huge effect upon. You know, because it is a vast, we don't want to go to all the labour of producing things that are going to fall apart any more than we want to have things that fall apart. It just makes no sense in a socialist context.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think Tom had his hand up first.
There's just a small thing. Just to add to what Bill said, it wasn't a Death Star, but you said about building your maintaining a 10-bedroom mansion. I think the first question was, if I wanted one right now in a socialist society, I'd have to convince people to build it for me, because I wouldn't be able to build it with my bare hands. So the question really for me would be, how would you convince enough people to build that mansion for you to live in? And that has an environmental impact as well, because you could convince people to do a more social form of housing where people they have what they need, so people would actually volunteer to build those houses. Mm. A 10-bedroom mansion or a Death Star wouldn't be built.
I mean, you might get ocean-going yachts built, you know, but then they would be for parties to book, you know, to go on oceans for a holiday. You know, you could still do things, but you could build these things to share. Yeah, but yeah, no. If people are free, and they are, the whole of the community is free, and their labour is theirs to dispose as they will, they are not going to put up with people who are just going to be sort of greedy. I mean, what you get all these kind of questions like, why don't I just go and take everything I want? You know, why don't they, well, why don't you go down to the bakery and take sort of 30 loaves home with you each time? You'll soon find that your kitchen is stinking like hell. So, basically, people, you know, once you have that kind of free access, then people take what they will need, and there will generally come to be an agreed consensus about what is the sort of level of material life they would actually want for themselves. I would go back to hunter-gatherers again. Hunter-gatherers are really good at this. They're really good at limiting what they want in order to spend more time socialising, so they don't have to spend so... I mean, I've got a friend who's an anthropologist. He goes out and works among hunter-gatherers, and he says that he's working with a particular band, and they're going nuts because this guy won't stop hunting. And there's just too much meat. And they are so angry with him that they've actually ostracised him from the band because he's actually producing too much. You know, it's like there is a sort of level that you know, will be reached, that a society will be a sort of an equilibrium that will come to.
Okay, it's 10 to 9, so I think it may be if we sort of think of winding up around about 9 o'clock. I'll see you with your hands up, Kevin. And maybe just a reminder, if anyone else on Discord, if they can hear me, maybe think about putting a queue. It'd be nice to have someone chipping in from elsewhere. Maybe if we have in our heads to wind up in about 10 minutes' time, unless we get a rush of questions first. But, Kevin?
Yeah. Yeah, I just sort of came in at the end of something, conversation going on. My memory now is starting to fade again. We're talking about how things become obsolete before their time. You know, car manufacturers, for instance, cars are built so they will fade, or they will only last a certain amount of time. Anyone that's interested in this should read Vance Packard, Building Obsolescence. It's a very interesting book.
Which one?
Vance Packard, Building Obsolescence.
I was looking at something online the other day. Somebody had a printer which had stopped printing, so he took it to the back of the shop, and the shop said, "I'm sorry, you'll just have to get another one." So he knew a little guy down the road, and he took it to him, and the guy said, "Oh, I know what's wrong with that." And this is all on camera, and he took the bottom off of it. It's sealed, so he had to break the bottom off of it, and he got a screwdriver and said, "Watch this." And he found a little microchip, and he pinged it out, and the thing started working again. The microchip had been installed to stop the machine working after so many copies. And that's the sort of thing that is actually being done today.
One should be careful getting the chip on your shoulder.
Right, we've got Mike. Mike, you're live in Birmingham. Yeah, what's your comment?
Hello, is that me?
Yeah.
Right. I have a comment. By the time the humans take power away from the people who own the planet, warming will be well on the way to a runaway warming. I don't think the utopian ideas that the speaker was saying were on, free access and all that sort of stuff, will be a long time coming, because there's a lot of warming already in the oceans, already in the backgrounds, and that's going to come over the next 50 years. It will devastate the growing area, and devastate where people live, and they play with the woods being overwhelmed with these tides. So I tend to agree with one of the speakers earlier on, that there's a hell of a lot of stuff in the way of getting back to building society.
Okay, thanks. Richard, did you want to...
Not particularly. I think he's right. I mean, it's a huge task. We better get our skates on, basically. it's the only thing I can say to that, really.
Carla?
I'm not so pessimistic. I don't think it is. I think that even capitalists know what's going on, and I think that it's not too late. I think we can halt, not necessarily... we can't regress it, perhaps, but we can halt it. And I think there is certain awareness, even in capitalism, that you know, there is a limit to growth and what it's doing. Because I really don't think the rich guys want to commit suicide, because this is what it is.
you know, we're all going to commit suicide if we carry on like this. So I actually think that they probably will, as they are doing now, sort of putting some curbs. You know, we see it all the time, you know, new legislation for this and new legislation for that. So I don't think that they will let it get so far. And I think that perhaps there, this fear, you know, this the whole climate thing, this whole fear of scaring people, I don't think it's helpful for the socialist case, to be quite honest. I think people just don't want to listen to it, you know. But I don't think that they would be so stupid as to allow it to get so far that we're all going to die.
Well, I think I would go along with that a good way. I have a friend who's really idealistic, and she set up a little business, and she gives seminars to business people, really top wealthy business people, on climate change. Yeah, and she's given up doing it because she's been so sort of her idealism has been completely shattered, because all they want to tell her is how that they can ensure that their security guards can be kept on side in the case of social breakdown. That's what they want to tell them. So, to hell with most of us, we've got our little enclave somewhere up in the mountains somewhere, you know. But on the whole, yes, I think that there will be a move. Yeah, it may be slow, and it may be too slow in capitalism, but at least there will be some move. But ultimately, I don't see that there is any solution to this whole problem other than socialism. And without socialism, I think ultimately it will just go on getting worse and worse. Because, you know, sort of, I just can't believe the way people seem to think that sort of, you know, we talk about growth. As though it, in capital growth, in capitalist societies, as though it's a choice. You know, it's like I was saying, it's like the whole society now is done out of control. It's not a choice. Nobody is in control of this. Growth is essential to capitalism. You can't have capitalism without growth. It will just go on growing. You know, if you stop it trying to grow, then it's just going to collapse. And nobody's going to allow that to happen. Not by choice, unless it's a working power. Yeah.
Okay, any other comments either for anyone here or anyone else out there in cyberspace? Oh, Danny?
Yeah. Just a quick one. From what I can see, capitalism runs on mistaken identity. All this racism and the division there are about humanity that it tries to reinforce all the time. What in fact we've got is a common identity. And what we need to do, we need to discover that. Because with capitalism, you have a thing where the more you have, the more you've been able to take, the more you can deny others, the more you are. With socialism, it's the more you bring and the more you share, the more you are. So we've got to find this common identity. And once we do that, you can't exploit or oppress or abuse those people you identify with. And I see no problem. Once we've found the common identity, a majority common identity, I can see no problem.
That's it, it's finding.
Yeah, we've got to find that common identity, yeah.
Okay, it's near enough 9 o'clock. Unless anyone else got anything really pressing to say. Richard, did you want to say anything to sort of sum up at all? Or?
No, I'm a nervous wreck after that.
Oh, sorry, Alan. Chuck, I didn't see.
No, you're the right ones.
All right, yeah.
Maybe there's others.
Maybe we hear from Alan and Janet.
Know that southern Turkey from east to west has been
absolutely had an absolutely catastrophic forest fire. Catastrophic villages wiped out, women died, and yet the community in this very divided country, the community is absolutely pulled together. Bulk of the firefighters are ordinary village folk and people from urban areas who are going in there. They're the ones doing the bulk of the firefighting on the ground, the clearing of undergrowth, the cutting down of trees. It's quite staggering. People make convoys of water carriers up the mountains to the firefighters. People carry 20, 30 litres, 40 litres of water on their backs to get it to the people. Others who can't be there are making sandwiches and meals for people who's being ferried up. People with minibuses, you cannot believe the sight of minibuses packed with sheep and goats being evacuated out, along with people. It's a staggering thing, and these people are all doing it because it needs to be done. Not being paid for. They're not receiving any recognition. And this is, in a pure way, this is socialism at work. People pulling together, helping each other, working for the community, and it's inspirational in some way, where the central has still bottom line is that people are doing what has to be done, and it gives you faith in people. It gives you faith in a future that is probably going to burn up on a planet that's burning. I don't know, I'm waffling, but they are inspirational. And Richard, you've travelled in this country, you know what the people are like. Absolutely wonderful. And they'll fight each other like fury, but when the challenge comes, they unite together as people do all over the world to face it and deal with it and protect themselves and their communities.
Alan, it's lovely to hear you, and that's a great, great point to make. And I'd just like to say there's been quite a lot of research done on this, and it seems to be the default attitude of human beings in crisis situations. We see this all the time in disaster scenarios. People abandon their proprietarian relationships completely, and it just becomes a matter of community and saving the community and doing everything that we can for each other. We're a social species. We're an evolved cooperator as a species, and there's no other species on the planet like us. And, you know, and given the opportunity, that's what we do. It's a great, great example, Alan.
Okay, thanks. Well, it's 9 o'clock, so maybe, I suppose being a capitalist, we're sort of slave to the time, aren't we, as Richard pointed out.
That was a good one to end on.
Yeah. Lovely, yeah. Yeah, so if we'd all like to, fascinating talk.